for our message this morning. You can open your Bibles to Matthew chapter 5. I've entitled the message this morning, The Blessing Beatitudes. As you well know, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, we refer to as the Sermon on the Mount. And the Blessing Beatitudes are found in the first part of chapter 5, the very first part of this sermon. Thinking about the sermon a little bit, if I am correct, this is the longest place in the Bible. Matthew 5, 6, and 7 are the most words that Jesus spoke anywhere. If you have a red letter Bible, they're all red letters in chapter 5, 6, and 7. No interruption there. I think it is his longest recorded message. I believe it is one that every Christian should read often. Even if you're a slow reader, I think you can read it in less than 20 minutes. And it would be a blessing to your life, I believe, to do that for a week sometime, for 7 days, read the same passage over every morning, these three chapters. In thinking about the sermon, thinking about how it may have been when Jesus gave this sermon, we have verse 1, and seeing the multitudes, he went up into a mountain. This is Jesus. He saw lots of multitudes. He went up into a mountain. I believe that was probably a small hill in our interpretation. It certainly would not have done well for him to go up into a thousands of feet mountain to preach this sermon. So it was probably just an elevated spot that was called a mountain. And when he was set, his disciples came unto him, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, perhaps the other way of looking at it would be that maybe he did go to the mountain to be alone with just his disciples. Is this Sermon on the Mount just given to Jesus' disciples? Or did he go up into the mountain or the hill so that the multitude could hear while he spoke to his disciples? I don't think the Bible tells us that. If you find that, you let me know which it was. But Jesus taught them. I do believe, I'll back up and I'll say that I do believe that it was for the multitude because of, there's different theories on that depending who you read. Bible historians would differ, but I tend to think it was that, it was for the multitude because of chapter 7. Let's go back to chapter 7, verse 28 and 29, the last two verses right after Jesus is done speaking. Matthew records this, and he says in verse 28, Matthew 7, 28, and it came to pass when Jesus had ended these sayings, the people were astonished at his doctrine, for he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes. So we see astonishment in the multitudes for what Jesus said in this passage. In this sermon, Adam Clark sums it up this way. He said, thus ends a sermon, the most strict, the most pure, the most holy, the most profound and sublime ever delivered to man, and yet so amazingly simple is the whole that almost a child may apprehend it. Almost a child can read this passage, the words of Jesus, and understand everything that he has to say, even though he has some profound things to say, even though he is a holy God and righteous. We're going to focus this morning on the blessing, Beatitudes. Note before we read verses 1 through 12, note the promises in the end of each verse. Verse 3, theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Verse 4, for they shall be comforted. Verse 5, for they shall inherit the earth. For they shall be filled. For they shall obtain mercy. For they shall see God. For they shall be called the children of God. For theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And in verse 12 in the middle, for great is your reward in heaven. And those are the blessings of the Beatitudes, those last phrases that are there. Jesus was a profound teacher. Thinking about his sermon a little bit more on a broader sense before we read those 12 verses yet. I don't know. I was thinking about it and reading it last night again. Did Jesus simply pick up at verse 3 and read everything that we have through verse 27 of chapter 7? Did he just say all of that without any explaining in between? If so, he could have read it in about 15 minutes, and that's all the longer his teaching went. We aren't told. Again, we know that this is the words that Matthew copied from what he heard. And we know that Luke's words are a little different than that. So we don't have the identical word for word what Jesus said, because the two men have some things missing, one and the other. But it is profound to think about all what Jesus talked about. I thought about just reading this whole sermon to you this morning. I'm not going to do that. But briefly look ahead. He starts out with the Beatitudes of blessing. Then in verses 13 to 16, he gives an evangelistic twist to the disciples, commanding them to be lights, telling them they are lights to the world. Then in verse 17, he begins his discourse on the law. Think not that I am come to destroy the law. Verse 21, but thou shalt not kill. But I say unto you, in verse 22. Verse 27, verse 28 again, but I say unto you. Verse 32, but I say unto you. He's taking the Ten Commandments and expounding on them. Verse 34, but I say unto you. 39 and 44, all of them say, but I say unto you. Then he changes the subject very radically in chapter 6. If I was to change subjects that direly in the middle of a sermon, I would be afraid that I would lose you. But Jesus didn't. He went to talking about almsgiving, gave them some commands about that. And then he switches again to prayer, teaches them the Lord's Prayer, how to pray, and how to fast. And then again, changes the subject very radically in verse 19 to not laying up treasure on earth, but laying it up in heaven, considering how God takes care of everything. Chapter 7, he jumps to judging. Just a lot of varying subjects in this sermon as you go through it. You think about that in Jesus' approach to teaching, and think about the fact that when he was finished, the people were astounded. It would be a blessing to have him here this morning to give us this delivery the way he would see we would need it today. That would be a blessing. Our text for this morning, Matthew 5, beginning at verse 1, reading through verse 12. And seeing the multitudes, he went up into a mountain. And when he was set, his disciples came unto him, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. The word blessed, repeated many times in our language today, could simply be happy. That's a synonym for blessed. Blessed goes a little deeper, because blessed produces happiness. But there's a depth to it that is real. We're talking about real Christian joy when we talk about blessed, happy. Blessed are the poor in spirit. What does that mean to us this morning? It's certainly not something that you would find in today's world in methods of finding joy and happiness. You would start out with the word poor. But Jesus did. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who are deeply impressed with their spiritual poverty. Blessed are those that stand empty-handed at the foot of the cross of Jesus. Blessed are those who have no feelings of superiority. Blessed are those who have tried, but they have failed. Blessed are those who do not know how to go on with life but believe that God does. Jesus said in Matthew 18, verse 4, Whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, and he had a little child in his arms, the same is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. That's certainly the opposite of advice you will get from the world today to be blessed and happy. But that's what Jesus said. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Happy are they. Blessed are they that mourn. Surely not. Surely not those that mourn. Physical death in our world today brings mourning again and again in people's lives. It brings mourning. And Jesus said, blessed are they that mourn. I believe Jesus was pronouncing a blessing on those who mourn the loss of loved ones. I believe there was more than that there. I think he was thinking also about spiritual mourning, mourning for sin. Mourning after the God of heaven, the mourning of penitence, and recognizing our failures and sins. How could it be that those are blessed? Blessed are they that mourn. Well, isn't it true as you look back on life and you think about times of mourning, whether it's mourning the loss of loved ones or mourning failures or mourning because of sin? Isn't it true that if you spend time mourning those things, if you can see, if I can see my own failures, isn't it true that I become much less critical of others when I can see my own failures? And isn't it true when we're in the state of mourning that we can respond to Jesus' call that says, come, I'll give you rest. And we couldn't come to God for rest if we didn't have any mourning, any difficulties in our life. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. I believe there's a double meaning in they shall be comforted as well. I believe that they will be comforted in this life. If they mourn, God is interested in comforting them. But even so much more in the future, in the heavenly home, they shall be comforted. Jesus promises that to each of us. Number three, blessed are the meek. You've probably heard a lot of definitions for meek and meekness in the Bible. And there's a lot of angles to think of it. What did Jesus mean when he said, blessed are the meek? Well, one way we can know is to look at the life of Jesus. But there are times in Jesus' life, things that he did, things that he said. One definition of meekness is a quiet and gentle spirit. And Jesus had that many times in life, many times in his teaching. But when he drove the money changers out of the temple, he wasn't very gentle. And he wasn't always quiet. He wasn't always gentle when he spoke to the Pharisees. Called them some names that I would be afraid to say to someone. Jesus did that. So he wasn't always quiet and gentle. Although I do believe that is one definition of meek, is a quiet and gentle spirit. Here's another definition of spiritual meekness, I believe, that might be more inclusive and better. Meekness is the subjection of one's will to the will of another. That's meekness. When I have subjection to someone else's will, whether it's a human being or whether it's God himself. Ultimate spiritual meekness would be a subjection of one's will to the God of heaven. That's meekness. What is meekness? Well, it's the opposite of selfishness. It's the opposite of defensiveness. It's the opposite of finger pointing. What is meekness? It is love. It is mutual support. It is forgiveness. Jesus said in Matthew 11:24, "Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest upon your souls." Blessed are the meek. Why? For they shall inherit the earth. What does that mean? Large pieces of real estate? Is that what you promised? Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Perhaps Jesus speaking to the Jews, and they understood inheritance, and they understood very well in their history their promise of inheritance to the land of Canaan. And so perhaps Jesus is referring to that inheritance in a spiritual way for us as his saints today. And promising us a spiritual inheritance that is great. On the other hand, I believe that it applies to some things here in life as well. And isn't it strange sometimes how that does work? The quiet of the land sometimes have the most. The meek of the land, sometimes God gives them more than other people because they can handle it. I think that's also true in our life. Blessed are the meek. Meekness, I believe, New Testament meekness, comes with the new birth of our hearts. In bending our hearts to the God of heaven in submission to him, then there is a birth of a new spirit in us, and it's a birth that produces meekness. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. All of you know something about the sensation of hunger. some maybe more than others. But you know what happens if you're putting in a hard day of work and it's been 5 hours since you ate anything, all of a sudden there's this pang inside of your stomach that says, I need something to eat. And perhaps you're very busy, perhaps you don't have time, and perhaps you go on for another hour, and if you do that, the pang gets a little stronger. Perhaps you're not where food is, and you make it all the way to the end of the day. But by then, your body is saying, eat. You must have food. By then, your body is saying, you try to perform your duties, and the body's not as strong already. Did you ever feel that in your muscles? You can work better after you eat when you're really hungry. And in reality, we Americans don't know much about this, but we tend to forget what happens next. If you don't have any food to put in you, in reality, you're going to get weaker and weaker and weaker until you die. That's what's going to happen. And so your stomach telling you that I'm hungry is a very great blessing that God gave you naturally. And you know very well what it feels like to have that hunger there and then come to a good meal and be filled. And then you can go on with the duties of life. Hunger even affects our psychic being. I don't know if you've ever felt that or not. If you got real hungry and you started getting angry, I've done that already, because you wanted food and it wasn't there. It produces things in your mind. And it would produce radical things in your mind if you continued hungry. So we hunger and thirst after food. We understand about that. But Jesus said, blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness. After righteousness. After the God who is righteous. Hunger and thirst after the righteousness of the Word of God. We'd like to read another chapter. This hunger and thirst, I believe, follows automatically after the blessing of being meek. If you're meek before the God of heaven, then you want to be taught by the God of heaven about his righteousness. And you love it. You want to do his will. You want his will. You want his blessing in your life, and you will be filled. If you continue to hunger and thirst and eat of the righteousness of God. The psalm writer put it this way, I stretch forth my hands unto thee, my soul thirsteth after thee as a thirsty land. Selah. Does your soul thirst after God this morning? If it does, you will be filled. Blessed are the merciful. For they shall obtain mercy. This is an interesting one. I think it's the only one that you'll receive what you give. But here, what you receive, if you are merciful, is mercy. One definition of merciful is a lively emotion of the heart which is excited by the discovery of any miserable creatures. A lively emotion of the heart, which is excited by the discovery of any miserable creatures. I suspect that all of you, in some way or other, have had mercy, or at least have had this feeling of mercy rise up inside of you, maybe even in something as small as a small animal. And you saw that it was going to be killed, and you saw that you could prevent its death, and you ran and did that because of that inspiration inside of you that you didn't want it to die. That's what we're talking about, mercy. You didn't want it to die, so you saved its life. Or you tried to. Or you saw that the creature or the human being was miserable and you wanted to embatter his life and you did something to embatter it. That's mercy. Mercifulness is an attribute of God. We can go to God, we can go to his scriptures, and we can learn and see many places where God had mercy on his people. Spiritual mercy is the pardon of injuries. I, as a human being, have been injured by someone, but mercy will pardon that. It will pardon it. Jesus, our ultimate example in that, said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." That was mercy. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Instead of settling into a selfish preoccupation with our own rights and desires, we learn to consider the needs of others. Proverbs 11:17, "The merciful man doeth good to his own soul, but he that is cruel troubleth his own flesh." Mercy blesses him who gives, and it blesses him who receives. It blesses both ways. What a blessing. Let's be merciful people. Number 6, blessed are the pure in heart. First Timothy 5:22 says, "Lay hands suddenly on no man, neither be partaker of other men's sins. Keep thyself pure." A principal part of the Jewish religion consisted in outward washings and cleansings. Jesus Christ, speaking to the Jewish people who realized that that was an important part of their religion, washing and cleansing outwardly, says, "Blessed are the pure in heart." Not the pure of hands, or the pure of feet, or the offerings that are clean and done exactly right, but the pure in heart. The pure in heart spiritually have lofty spiritual aspirations. The pure in heart are free from controlling sin. And the pure in heart are free from thinking myself much better than my brother. Blessed are the pure in heart, for for they shall see God here in this life, I believe, and in the life to come. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Peacemakers, what are they? Perhaps you children could tell us what peacemakers are. Do you have any peacemakers in your life? Most of you attend school somewhere. Can you think about school life? Can you think about someone in school who you would label as a peacemaker? What does he or she do to make him a peacemaker? There's many good answers to that question. I'll let you think about that, and you adults can think about that as well. It's good for us to think about who the peacemakers are in our congregation and to copy after them. What do they do? What do they have to say? Peacemakers. Romans 14:19 says, "Let us therefore follow after the things which make for peace." Are you and I following for what makes peace? Peacemakers are influenced greatly by Jesus Christ and his life. Peacemakers are interested in calming the storms of life that will come and the frictions that will come in personal relationships. They're interested in calming that. The closer one gets to Jesus Christ, the more peace-loving he will become. A peacemaker is a man or woman who labors for the public good and not his own agenda. A peacemaker is a man or woman who labors for the public good and not his own agenda. Verse 10, 11, and 12 are together. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake. So blessed are the persecuted. Surely not again. Blessed, happy are the persecuted, Jesus says. To be persecuted is to suffer. To be persecuted is to be laughed at, to be ridiculed. To be persecuted is sometimes in history, and even in our world today, depending where you live, persecution means physical harm or physical death. Suffering for Jesus Christ. Suffering because we're doing things his way. Blessed are they which are persecuted. Maybe it's the summit of everything that Jesus put down here before this. Maybe it's the peak, the ultimate of blessings. In Hebrews 11, it's said of Moses, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Blessed are those that are persecuted, those that suffer. Again, I believe it is in this life that they can be blessed. But he says, in verse 12, "For great is your reward in heaven." We tend to look at life on the terms of time. And a lifetime can look like a long time to us, but to God it's just a very short part of his eternity of blessing. The best is yet to come for those that are persecuted, which is truly the opposite of the wicked who cause the persecution. The blesseds. I'm sure if I would ask you this morning, you would all say, "Yes, I want to be blessed. I want to be happy." But are you willing to be men and women of poor in spirit? Are you willing to face grief and sorrow and mourning? Are you willing to be someone who has sinned and has mourned because of that? Are you willing to be meek? Are you hungering and thirsting after righteousness with a passion? Are you merciful to God's little creatures? And more importantly, are you merciful to your human beings that live beside you? If you are, then you will obtain mercy. Are you pure in heart? Are you peacemakers? And are you persecuted? Do you want the kingdom of God? Do you want to be comforted? Do I want to inherit the earth? Do I want to be filled with the blessing of God in my life? Do I want others to have mercy on me? Do I want God to have mercy on me? Do you want to see God today and when you die? See God with a smile on your face? Do you want to be called the children of God? Do you want to have a great reward in heaven? May God bless you. Shall we kneel for prayer?